And welcome to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
In this segment of our show, Paul Morris will be telling us about VEDA.
So what can you tell me about VEDA?
So the Vestibular Disorders Association has been supporting people and caregivers, people with vestibular disorders and caregivers, people who love and care for them for 40 years. Actually, a little bit more than 40 years. It was started by a small group of vestibular patients and medical professionals in 1983 here in the Portland area. They officially incorporated in 1985, so this, 2025, it's 40 years of doing this work. And there are really core activity, and well, let me say that in the 40 years that VEDA has been in existence and working on behalf of people with vestibular disorders, working with healthcare providers and communities to better understand vestibular disorders, we have really grown into one of, if not the largest organizations dedicated to vestibular patients here in the United States and globally. There are three core areas where we focus our activities. One is getting people medically and scientifically grounded information, and that is so, so important. I mean, the internet is a wonderful place, and it is a terrible place, like, all at the same time. And so when, if someone wakes up with dizziness or imbalance and they don't know what's happening, it's very instinctive in today's day and age to go to the internet, type in how one is feeling, and just get an avalanche of information back, some of which may be helpful, a lot of it won't. So what VEDA's core, it's about offering medically and scientifically grounded information, answering questions, and offering, emotional support and practical support for people who are living with vestibular disorders, as well as the people who care for them. The second thing is about connection. We're connecting people with healthcare specialists, healthcare providers who have a specialty in diagnosing and treating vestibular disorders, and that can be really hard to find. I have been on the team at VEDA since March. The number of conversations that I have had with our members and people that we serve, where they have said it took them 2 years, 3 years to find, and 5, 6, 8 doctors to find someone who could accurately diagnose their condition. And offer a treatment path, like, it's mind-boggling to me that in today's day and age, it can take that long to get the help that one needs. So we have a robust network of healthcare specialists, clinics, and clinicians who specialize in diagnosing and treating vestibular disorders. And that is a huge first step, is getting that accurate diagnosis. Oh. I think then the third part of our core work, so kind of like a stool, third leg of the stool, is advocacy. And what I mean by that is we're raising awareness about vestibular disorders, and we're seeking to raise awareness to improve health care outcomes. Vestibular, to me, and I think this is not an unusual view, vestibular disorders can often be invisible, right? Or they're misdiagnosed, they're dismissed, they're presumed to be something else, And so we have been at the forefront of raising awareness around better understanding what the word vestibular means and what these disorders, how these disorders can impact people, because you and I may have an imbalance disorder. We may have Meniere's or vertigo or perhaps vestibular migraine, but how those symptoms, how it affects us can be and present very, very differently. So it can be difficult to find a good treatment path.
Because
often, I mean, I hate to say this, but I think that there is a segment of the healthcare industry where if you don't fit into a tidy little box, right, it's not a checkbox. You're not, you know, it's harder to get help.
So
fortunately, the clinicians and the clinics that we work with, like, they really understand what vestibular disorders are, how it impacts people. They are really working hard to ensure an accurate diagnosis and helping people get the care they need. And then having this broader community, I think, also contributes to that.
So how do you reach out to folks who could potentially benefit from the work you're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, of course, using multiple communication channels is really important and something that we do. So we publish a number of free resources on our website, and so, of course, we're promoting that online on social channels. We have a robust, as I said, we have a robust network of vestibular healthcare professionals. So we're providing information and encouraging them to share information with people that they are seeing. The third way is really, you know, kind of what we're doing here is individuals having conversations with people that they know who may need to have this information. We have a wonderful network of support groups that are open and welcoming to people who are at all phases of their journey with a vestibular disorder. We have wonderful ambassadors who are talking in their communities and beyond about the impacts of vestibular disorders, and encouraging people to be in touch with us. You know, we get a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails, people, you know, who have just, they've woken up one day with, you know, without balance. They can't, you know, they're finding that they can't, you know, even just move around their house, let alone go to work or drive. And so they're finding, we're making sure that they can find us by continuing to put, you know, to share information and encourage conversations amongst, you know, between people about what vestibular disorders are, how they can be treated, what kind of support is is accessible and available. We do a quarterly magazine, we do an e-news, we have an e-news that is dedicated strictly for professionals, and we are often participating in research, in iterative research, that will continue to move the dial around treatment and healthcare.
So in your time with VITA, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Like I said, I just joined the team in March. But the moment, and there have been several moments, I would start with our annual conference. And this is another way, and something I should have mentioned, this is another way we're connecting with people. We do an annual conference in March that is a full week. It's all online. Right, so very, you know, pretty accessible to people, as long as they have an internet connection or the ability to have that. The conference is amazing. It's 2 hours a day. There's a panel of medical professionals and a panel of people who are living with and navigating vestibular disorders. And that was my sort of my introduction to VIDA. The chat feature of that conference was incredible. People being so willing to be vulnerable and share their story and share their challenges and support one another was really, really eye-opening. I have had subsequent conversations with individuals for whom, you know, the vestibular disorder that they have experienced, they thought was insurmountable. And they thought that their life was, you know, was going to be changed very adversely forever. And they've been able, because of the information that we've been able to provide, especially around healthcare providers who, you know, are in their area or maybe in their area that they could travel to, someone who was going to understand where they were at and say, you know what, this is not all in your head, this isn't caused by stress, this isn't caused by anxiety, this isn't caused by your diet, this is a very real thing, and we're going to figure this out together. I've had a number of those conversations, and that gives me a lot of hope that people will continue to not write that we are on. It gives me confidence and hope that what we are doing is on the right track, and it's a great reminder that people do not need to suffer in silence. They do not have to go. They do not have to do this alone. There is a large community of individuals, of healthcare providers, us, that will be on that journey with that person.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Tyler North will be telling us a little bit about the Excel Society. So what can you tell me about the society?
So Excel, I mean, we've been incorporated for 61 years. Last year was our 60th year, and we began as a small community integration project, which is a cooking class in the basement of a church. And now, as we've grown and matured, we serve over 450 people in Edmonton and Calgary, and employ 700 people also in those same regions.
So can you tell me a little bit about disabilities themselves, people that make up your work?
Oh, 100%. Yes. So we provide a range of services for people with developmental disabilities or cognitive impairments. So we have ones that mainly focus on brain injury, but different sites will focus on different diagnoses. So then we have staff that are, I would say, they're more applicable or they are trained specifically to help provide a higher level of care. So for example, we have a home where everyone has a hearing impairment, different varying levels, but everyone in that home that provides services can use ASL. Things like that.
So what are some of the key benefits for those individuals with a specific disability to have that community right there, those who are of similar experience and similar backgrounds?
I think it provides connection. There's a lot of challenges in this industry where there's not as many opportunities to engage with one another and participate in events, things out in the community. And as well, we have a lot of events. We have a whole rec team that puts on a lot of great things. We have parties, barbecues, holiday events where we'll bring clients from different houses and they can meet one another or see each other again. Just really connect and get that excitement, engage with one another, engage with volunteers, engage with the staff. It's always really nice to see everyone. I am fortunate enough to be in communication, so I get to go to a lot of these events. I help run a lot of these events, and just getting to know all the clients and their different personalities is just amazing.
So I'm guessing when you do an event, accessibility is a key consideration. You want to make sure everyone can fully participate.
Oh, yes, 100%, yeah.
So How does the society reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that the work exists?
So we mainly work with provincial government and different funders, so HDDD, organizations like that, and they will give us a list of clients who are in need of these services, and then based on our vacancies, we will be able to take clients in. We currently have a wait list for some items, and that's why we're working more on fundraising, increase the amount of homes that we have to take on more clients. But we do have a website. We have people calling in. We do a little bit on social media as well. And there are different directories, like the senior housing directory, and things like that, for people to get in contact with the right facility with services that they need.
So are there any challenges in coordinating the efforts of each house?
Oh, definitely, yes. Because every house is different. Most of our houses, we have, just a little bit of background, we have 43 different homes in Edmonton, 4 different ones in Calgary, and then some larger assisted living facilities in Edmonton. So all of those competing priorities in terms of just maintenance, the things that they would like in the homes, the services that they provide are different at different locations, and just kind of working together with the different groups to kind of figure out what's the best, what's going to work, what's in most dire need right now. For example, if the deck is falling apart at one of the homes and we have the accessible decks so that people with wheelchairs can roll down, that's a high priority and that needs to be done. And every year we have a maintenance list of things that are prioritized. But, yeah.
So your time with the society, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
Definitely. So right now we're in the large capital campaign to build some barrier-free homes for the people in our care. We're seeing a lot of trends that people are needing more services because they're aging, they have different mobilities along with their diagnosis. So we actually built we took a floor from one of our designated assisted living facilities and created this type of project to really make a similar home. So we created a similar situation. These people all had barrier-free suites and they had access to all the healthcare support. We saw great success in their decrease in hospital visits because they called support on site. They had an increase in recreational activities. Our larger sites also have more people on hand for recreation. And they were able to enjoy barrier-free suites. So they had their own bathroom that accommodated their diagnosis, things that they needed, maybe like wider hallways, larger, like the rails on the different sides, all these things that helped them truly enjoy their home. So I think that would be a great success for itself, and I'm hoping that we can move towards building more of these in different places around the city so other clients can enjoy that as well.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no worries.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Last night, you went out drinking and you did the right thing. You left the car at home. Thank you. But even though you slept, do you think you're okay to drive? If you drank a lot the night before, you could still be intoxicated. Only time, not a cold shower, a hot coffee, or a big meal can lower your blood alcohol concentration. Plan ahead for your night out and the next morning. You'll be helping to keep our roads safe. A message from SmartServe Ontario and Arrive Alive, Drive Sober.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Paul Morris told us a little bit about VITA, and we heard about the Excel Society from Tyler North. In this segment of our show, Lee Sonnenberg will be telling us about AER. So what can you tell me about AER?
AER is the Association for Education and Rehabilitation of the Blind and Visually Impaired. It is the membership association for the professionals who provide education and rehab services to individuals who are blind, deafblind, or have low vision. We have members in the United States and Canada and across the world. Our organization's been was formed in 1984 as a merger of two previous associations that serve the blind. And I mean, that's the generic history, I guess you could say.
So, curious, what are some of the key areas that the organization focuses on in terms of improving things for those with a vision impairment?
What AER focuses on is building community amongst the providers and those professionals, so they have the opportunity to share and collaborate and develop best practices and implement those best practices that they learn from research and within some of our, you know, members of the organization that do that. We offer continuing education for our members, which, you know, shares that information and knowledge and allows them to have that information to implement with their clients and with their students. And we do continuing education through conferences. Many of our chapters have annual conferences. The international organization hosts a very large conference every 2 years, and then we have a continuing education platform that is connected with our website where our members can also gain access to content.
So I'd imagine that doing continuing education for members would help to dispel any myths or misperceptions surrounding vision loss.
Yes, our continuing education really kind of runs the spectrum of topics from, you know, basic knowledge and information on, you know, new technology or sometimes as simple as new techniques for cane training. Our continuing education focuses on ethical behavior of professionals as well as the impact of mental health on the students and the clients that our professionals serve and ways to how to, they can also address that and support individuals.
So how does the organization reach out to potential new members to partner with?
That is a good question. It's a really a multi-pronged approach. Our chapters really are kind of our grassroots effort in connecting with new professionals in the field. We work closely with our university programs that prepare new personnel to be entering the field, try to work with them when they're students and connect with them, show them the benefit, or at least make them aware of the benefit of community and the network of professionals that are out there. So many of our new professionals may be in an itinerant position and feel a little isolated. So it's really important that we start building that community early in their career so they'll have some longevity and want to stay.
So are there any challenges in coordinating with members to make sure that everyone's on the same page, as it were?
Oh, that's a question. Yes, I think there really are. With so many different ways that our members take in information and connect with the world, whether it's, you know, the different social media platforms or email or podcasts or things of that nature, it's always trying to ensure that we have a diverse group of promotional material that we send out to folks to make sure that we can connect with everybody in that platform that works best for them.
So in your time with the organization, is there any success moment or story that stands out for you you'd like to share?
I think probably a recent success moment, and I'm not sure, we're still waiting for the outcome of it, but, you know, the U.S. Department of Education sent out some non-continuation letters for several grant programs that, you know, impacted our membership, you know, whether it was a university program or impacted, you know, some of our members and their employment. And it was just really exciting to see how we were able to share that information and that need for advocacy with our members, and they responded, each in their own unique way. You know, we had some that utilized the platform that we use and were able to send letters to either state and national legislatures, but then we also had some that were able to just pick up the phone call and start making phone calls to pick up the phone and start making phone calls to different people in their networks that had a connection who could, you know, possibly impact some change. And so it was just really, it was just great to see, and encouraging to see the membership kind of come together and respond to that need, and that AER was able to help with facilitating those connections.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. My friends, there's nothing worse in the disabilities realm than having a rare disorder that you can't get a correct diagnosis on. There are people who spend literally decades on end just trying to be heard, respected, and understood. I maintain, whether it's a rare condition or a household name, whether it affects balance, eyesight, hearing, thought process, no matter what, a person with any sort of disability is entitled to respect, consideration, having their voices heard. Someone once said to me, the biggest disability is being human, but I maintain that's intermixed with the real biggest disability, prejudice and a closed mind. People aren't willing to take the time to understand others, to ask what accessibility means to them, rather than dictating what it means to them. And they're a lot worse for it. By having those conversations, by getting to know people with disabilities, you come to understand not only the diversity and the complexity of the human species, but you come to understand there are so many more ways of getting things done than we tend to think of. Look at supportive housing, for example. We might take it for granted that you just walk in by turning a doorknob, but for somebody with limited hand use, that can be something that needs adaptation. My request for us all is, we don't take the little things for granted. We take a moment to appreciate the gifts that we do have, regardless of where we're coming from ability-wise. We look at others as capable, contributing members of society, even if it's only a matter of achieving their own personal goals. A person with a disability still has the right to live with dignity, strength, and honor. We're not all out to change the world. If it happens by effect, so much the better. But a person is always entitled to follow their heart and their mind. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me, you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Your support keeps us in the air. Donate to Fundrive at cjsffundrive.ca or text donate to 778-782-2573 and keep community radio flying high.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent,